This is Michelle Price coming to you from the third coast of Houston, Texas today on Breakthrough Business Strategies Radio. Oh my gosh, you know, if you've been listening to me for a while, I am loving the cool mornings we have here. Ah, it's just great. But I understand some of my us guys over on the East Coast are getting snow for Halloween. So guess you're going to have to wish you had dressed up as a Viking instead. So, you know, here are the two things that we talk about on Breakthrough Business Strategies Radio. We talk about business success mindset, your inner game, and Web 2.0, tools, techniques, and strategies, your outer game, so that you're equipped to create success for your business today. Whether you're a small local business or you are a national or international business, these two components are critical for everyone's success in now. All right. For those of you who've tuned in for the first time today, Don Cooper is a sales trainer and speaker, and he teaches companies how to break through those tired old sales techniques that just aren't authentic and they don't work in today's business economy. He's known as the sales heretic, and he always has awesome, great knowledge and information that he shares with us every time he comes on the show, whether it's the first Monday of the month when he gives us those great sales tips, or it's twice a year when we get him for a whole hour. So everybody, please join me as we welcome Don Cooper. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Michelle. I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm loving the cool weather. Have you been in an area where you've gotten snow yet?
Yeah, we got snow a little bit last week. We might get some more on Wednesday.
No, I couldn't believe it. I have to admit, I hadn't heard of anyone getting snow for Halloween. Oh, you know, it's been interesting watching the conversations on Twitter as we've been talking about what to do to improve things for fourth quarter sales. And I'm just curious, Dawn, would you say over your time as you've been working with businesses or even sales professionals, do most or the average person think at this point of the year they really don't have any hope in improving their numbers if they're not where they want to be?
Yeah, that's a big problem. People kind of punt when it comes to November and December, and they think, well, you know, I've done all I can. We're into the holidays now. No one's going to buy anything, and I'll just wait until January to start getting serious again. And if
so
you have that
whole
attitude,
mindset of waiting until the holidays are over, why do you think they do that? Because is it been your experience that you really can't make a sale during the holidays?
No, and that's one of the big myths. There are several myths that relate to fourth quarter selling, one of which is you just can't sell during the fourth quarter because nobody's interested in buying. People are focused on the holidays, they're focused on their family, they're focused on vacation, so it's not a good buying environment. The reality is people buy just as much during the holidays as they do any other time of year. People still got to get stuff done. They still have to plan for next quarter. They still need and want things. And whether or not you can tie your particular product or service into the holidays, people still need stuff year-round. So the idea that we can't sell in the fourth quarter is more of an excuse in our own heads.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because as I'm looking over a multitude of areas of business, I'm noticing that what holds people back in any part of a business always is what's in their head.
Absolutely. Our own beliefs are either our greatest asset or our worst enemy. If we believe we could do something, we can do it. If we believe we can't do it, we can't. We won't. So whatever the myths are that we believe, we live by those. Those myths become reality because we give them the power over us. You know, if you believe that businesses don't have any money left at the end of the year, which is another big myth about fourth quarter selling, you won't try. You won't make an effort. You'll wait until first quarter, or you'll drop your price radically in the hopes of maybe picking up something. The reality is very often companies have more money in the fourth quarter because they've been cutting back and saving all year, because they don't know what's going on, and that's especially true this year. Companies are sitting on record levels of cash right now. So they have budgets, and if you go into a sales situation thinking, well, they don't have any money, you won't make any effort to sell. But if you go in believing, okay, they've got money, they're sitting on it, I just need to give them a really good reason to part with some of it, then you have a whole different approach, and your odds of making a sale go up radically.
All right. I've heard this quite a bit, that companies are sitting on a lot of cash. But I have to tell you, and you and I have talked about so many things over the couple of years, and I totally get when you say it's in our head when we think people don't have the money. But why is it they always use that as the first excuse? Always, no matter how much value you put in a proposal, the first thing out of their mouth is, well, our budget.
Because people are often constrained by budgets. People look at their budget as a restrictive device, not an empowering device. In any given company, in any given family, there's a budget because money is finite at any given point in time. So you need to make plans based upon how much money you have. The challenge we're experiencing right now and have been for the past couple of years is that there's so much uncertainty out there in the economy, families and companies don't know precisely what to plan for. So they're socking more money away, which to some extent is good because the savings rate does need to increase. At the same time, they're not spending as much just because they don't know what's going to happen. So what we need to do is to give them a good reason to spend money, because whatever the budget is, people will blow their budget if they have a good enough reason. So if somebody's not buying your product or your service, then you've got one of two situations. Either they aren't motivated, they just don't care, or you're not doing a good enough job in showing them the value of buying your product or service.
Okay, so without taking us back down to, I don't know, maybe we do need to go back down to the basics, and you guys are going to laugh. I know some of you tweet me. It's almost like Don has to teach us each time we hear him. What I want to bring an example to the table, Don, is I've learned from you to ask better questions and to really be listening through the beginning of the whole process and to be paying attention to when they say things that you think might be leading in a direction, to ask him to give you clarity, especially around what it is they want, the results they want, and what kind of budget they have to work with.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle it, though, when you get into the negotiations after you've made your proposal, you verified everything that they shared with you in the conversation, and they say that they really love everything that's there? When you're dealing with bigger companies, you can't always have a situation where you get to close it in that conversation.
Right.
I don't know any of them that don't say we have to talk about it.
Right.
Then they come back with questions around the things you thought you already had clarity on.
Right.
How do you handle that? They'll come back with the very things that you thought you had nailed down.
Well, it gets back to your comment about the basics. You can never study the basics enough. I have been training in Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art, for about 5 years. And almost every single class, we're doing basics. Because no matter what you do, if your grasp of the fundamentals isn't really strong, nothing else is going to work. And we can so easily get away from the fundamentals as we look at more advanced concepts and techniques and ideas. So it's critical to always go back to the basics, to go back to the fundamentals, to make sure that the foundations of what we're doing are strong. And when it comes to talking with clients and talking with prospects, the fundamentals involve asking enough of the right questions, and too many people don't ask enough. It's not enough just to know what it is they want or what it is they need or what their budget is. There are a lot of other things that we need to know. We need to know, what do they fear? What are their priorities? What are their problems? What are the things that they're worried about? What are the things that they don't know? What are the things they don't know they don't know? What are the various priorities within the company right now? What are the dynamics between the chief leaders? What issues are going on in a different part of the company that might affect the part you're talking to? There's a lot more information that we need to gather than we usually do. I have a presentation called Outsell Your Competition, How to Gain a Massive Edge in a Tough Marketplace. And I share 37 different questions to ask, because most salespeople don't ask anywhere near enough questions. The more questions we ask, the more information we gather. And you want to be asking questions through every part of the process, from the initial prospecting all the way to right up to closing. So as you're doing that negotiation, you want to be asking questions to find out if you're on track. Have I answered everything you were concerned about? Do these numbers make sense to you? Does this align with your strategic vision? Does this second option seem to fit better than the first or the third option? So you want to be asking questions all throughout. Too many salespeople are taught to pitch, to memorize this whole list of features and benefits and just throw that out there. Here's why we're so great, and here's what our product does, and here's why it's wonderful, and yada, yada, yada. Pitching belongs in baseball, not in sales.
You know we're going to tweet that, right?
I hope so. And for anybody who's wondering, my Twitter handle is at Don Cooper. Nice and simple. So it's not enough to talk. Too many salespeople just talk. And that's a problem for a lot of business owners and professionals as well. They just talk because they're hoping that they say enough, they'll say the right thing. Too often we believe that if we just talk enough, eventually the client will say yes. The opposite is true. The more we listen, the more likely the prospect is to say yes. So we've got to ask questions and listen to the answers and then ask more questions. And that question asking doesn't end, ever. Even after you make the sale, you still need to ask questions. How is this working for you? Is it doing what you expected it to do? Is it doing what we promised to do? Is it exceeding your expectations? Are there any issues with it we should know about? Has anything surprised you?
How soon
do you think you'll need another one? When do you want to talk again? Are you free for lunch next Friday? Who else in your company could also use this?
You know, it is interesting, Don, as we've learned from you, gosh, gee, I think, aren't we going on our second year now?
Yeah.
That I can share personally, and I'd love to see what you guys have to say in the stream. I can share personally that I have increased my questions. It's been absolutely amazing. And it's funny how each time you tweak your own process, and combining that with what I'm learning with Pauline Ferrici on this authentic leadership, it's been really, really interesting to see how the results are shifting.
I don't doubt it, because asking the right questions and enough of them makes a huge difference. One of my coaching clients, somebody that I had worked with about 2 years ago, contacted me the other day and said that the coaching she got from me completely changed her approach to sales. And last year, she was the number one salesperson in her department. And this year, she's on track to be number one again. And the single biggest thing was changing what questions she asked.
And you know, the thing that has always kind of caught me off guard, I'm already a natural question asker, which is what makes me great as an interviewer.
Sure.
But it's funny how when you're in the sales process, I was amazed at the things that I didn't think to ask that I've learned from you. What do you think are some of the first things that salespeople and business owners really should do or understand around asking better questions in this fourth quarter?
They need to understand that the key to the sale is not whatever they're selling. Whatever they're selling is irrelevant. It doesn't matter because nobody cares. Nobody cares about you, your company, your product, or your service. They care about themselves. So as a salesperson, as a professional, as a business owner trying to make a sale, you need to learn about them. It's not the prospect's job to learn about you. It's your job to learn about them. Everything starts with that attitude, that approach. If all you're doing is qualifying, do you have a need, do you have a budget, do you have the authority to say yes, okay, well, let's go. That's not enough, not even close to enough. And that's the extent of qualifying for most people. That's why I talk about going beyond qualifying, because that just scratches the surface. There's so much more you need to know. What are their deepest fears? What are their outside pressures? What are they going to lose their job over? What are their goals they're trying to meet personally, and how those goals relate to the company goals? What are their other options? What are the relative strengths and weaknesses of those options compared to your option?
Yeah.
A good salesperson is a detective. There's a mystery here, and the solution is going to be, ideally, your product or service, but you cannot present that until you fully understand the mystery. You have to unravel it first. And that might involve a lot of people, can involve a lot of time.
Okay. I like the analogy of a detective. That actually helps us to kind of frame it mentally a little better. How can we be a detective but not be obtrusive?
Smile. Be friendly. That's really most of it. One of the reasons people don't ask enough questions is that they are afraid of coming across as a police interrogator. Where were you last night? What were you doing? Do you have an alibi? That's what we're all afraid of coming across as. The reality is completely different. I have never had a prospect complain that I asked too many questions. I have frequently had prospects tell me that they were impressed at how many I asked. That they'd never been asked some of these questions. They never thought about some of these issues. My clients have reported back to me the same things. Because when you're asking a question of somebody, you're asking them to talk about themselves. Well, what is everybody's favorite topic? Themselves. People will happily talk about themselves all day. So when you're asking about them, that gives you a huge advantage because that's what they want to talk about. Which is not to say that you should be asking them basic questions, because you should do your homework first. If it's a public company, research them. Find out what it is they do, what they produce, who their competitors are, what their industry issues are. You should go into the sales call knowing some things off the bat, and then you can use that as the base of some of your questions. I understand that competitor X is bringing out this new product next quarter. How do you see that affecting your sales of this product? That's a much stronger question than what are your competitors doing?
Mm. Okay.
When I say you want to be a detective, you want to be looking for clues and not just from your suspect, from everywhere. Do your research. How much money is this company sitting on? Approximately how much annual income does your prospect make if they're an individual? If you know what they do for a living, you can guesstimate what their annual income is. That gives you an idea of what their lifestyle is.
I could see how for small businesses that could be kind of overwhelming.
Sure.
Because they're wearing so many hats that it could be a full-time job to have someone do the research and set things up for sales. What
Yep.
would you recommend for that segment that could help them maybe do it a little more proficiently or organized?
There's a number of things. One is to schedule specific time for your research and your prospecting. If you devote just a few hours a week to it, you can get a lot accomplished in that space of time. Another option is to hire somebody on a part-time basis. You may only need somebody to work 4 or 5 hours doing research for you. Or you might get an intern. Have them do research. In which case you pay them even less, or you might not pay them anything. And they're getting valuable job experience. Because if they're doing research, they're really truly learning stuff.
Yeah, the whole intern thing, that opens some interesting doors we won't dig into in this conversation. I have found that to be a lot different than it used to be. The kids, I hate to sound like my parents, but I'm finding they are so darn picky about what what they choose to work with as interns. And I'm like, really? When you don't have experience, you can't cherry pick.
Right.
You need to be thinking more about where is it that I want to be in 5 years and where's going to be the environment that I can learn those skills the best. Not, oh, I'm not going to do this because I have to do grunt work. Well, hello.
Yeah, that's a whole
really
other conversation.
Think the business owner is so okay. We're looking at how to really focus on our basic skills better. The importance of asking more and better questions. How we hold ourselves back, our own limiting beliefs. For example, you named some really good ones. It's the holidays. No one's going to be buying. Oh, my
right.
gosh. And I hear that all the time as well as I hear around August and September, oh, everybody's trying to take their last-minute vacation.
Right.
Might as well hang it up for making sales. Can you give us an example where you've made a sale during the holidays and what that process was like so people can see where they might be tripping themselves up?
I don't look at sales on a seasonal basis. I look at sales on a daily basis, as a weekly basis. I've got my annual goals, my monthly goals, my weekly goals, and so I don't really focus on that. I can't predict when somebody's on vacation. I can't predict when somebody's going to be, you know, at their desk. So all I can do is engage in the processes that I know are effective. Now, if you don't have good goals and you don't have good processes for achieving those goals, that's when you're in trouble. And too many salespeople, business owners, and professionals have neither goals nor processes. So the first thing you got to do is establish what your goals are. So if you have annual goals, great. Have you broken them down into monthly goals and then weekly goals? What do you need to achieve in what time frame in order to create the results you want? And then you need processes. How are you going to create those results? Because they don't just happen. You can't just engage in random actions and expect a great result. Anybody who's achieved anything significant in any field got there via a process. They figured out what works and created systems based upon what works. So I know what works for me in my business, so I focus on those things. The question is, what works for you in your business? What processes will lead to the results that you want? How much time do you need to devote to those processes per day, per week, per month, in order to achieve your monthly goals, your annual goals? Part of that depends upon who your target market is. Part of it is based on how long your sales cycle is. Part of it depends on whether you're selling to businesses or consumers. Part of it depends on whether you're a salesperson or a business owner. Part depends on whether you have a small sales team or a large sales team.
Bringing up some really great points that we've talked about in the past, but just like we're constantly going back to the basics of sales, I don't think we can go this path too often, and that's processes. And of course, Stephanie Callahan teaches us about that with productivity all the time. And it's funny because I remember, I think it's been five, almost 6 years ago, when I first went through a workshop with Michael Port. Now, his process, what he was teaching us about processes is in a whole different area. You're talking about sales processes, but
yes.
It sticks with me because he had such a great process to teach us. In other words, he had a process in how he taught us.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the workshop, you know, as I was literally going through it day by day, each process, and then putting together my own process, I was like going, oh, my gosh. I kind of
sure.
laughed being a business owner for 30 years, and I was just now recognizing where I had processes and where I didn't have processes. And you can see, like the light of day,
yep.
where it was more successful.
I coach salespeople business owners and professionals. And the first question I ask is, what are your goals? And very often I'll either get a blank stare or I'll get mumbling. They don't have clearly defined goals, so we'll establish those. And the next question is, okay, well, how are you going to get there? And they have no idea. There's no process involved. So I'll work with them to map out a process for them based upon their business that will help them to get to where they want to go. You have to have those two things. It's like saying, well, I want to take a vacation. Great. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Okay, well, you got to know where you're going to go first. And once you've got that figured out, you need to figure out how you're going to get there. By car, by train, by plane. How long will you be there for? Do you want to stop on the way? Where will you stay? All these questions have to be answered because you're not going to have an enjoyable vacation unless you have these things figured out.
And it's funny how when you give a personal example, everyone can get it.
Right.
Because it's like they've done that. So it,
yeah.
It helps to understand how to transfer that knowledge over.
Yeah. Now, is it possible to take a vacation by just jumping in the car and driving somewhere and not have a specific endpoint in mind? Yeah, that can happen. Just as it's possible to make a sale without a specific goal or process. Can you do that consistently and maximize results? No. You don't want to get to age 80 and realize you didn't go to a lot of places that you really would like to have gone just because you didn't plan to do it. The same way, you don't want to get to the end of the year and realize you didn't make anywhere close to the number of sales that you need because you didn't have a plan and you didn't focus on it.
I know you're always really good about giving us almost like a list of things that we need to remember when we're trying to learn the lesson that you bring, whether it's the first Monday of the month when you give us a tip, or if it's the hour that we get to have this great free sales coaching from you. Do you have a list or is there a number of things we need to be thinking about as we're going into the fourth quarter that you want to teach us today?
Yes. I it's funny you mentioned that because I was talking about that recently with somebody else. I tend to think in lists. That's how my mind works. And I find that works very well for me, and it's part of what I teach to others for various reasons. And the list that comes to mind here is there are five ways to increase your sales as a general rule. Number one, talk to more people. Do more prospecting. Number two, talk to the same number of people, but close a higher percentage of them. So in other words, get better at closing. The third way is to talk to the same number of people, close the same percentage of them, but sell them more stuff. In other words, increase the size of the sale. The fourth way is to talk to the same number of people, close the same percentage of them, sell them the exact same stuff, but charge more for it. So either to raise your price or not discount as much as you normally would. And the fifth way is to talk to the same number of people, close the same percentage of them, sell them the same stuff, charge them the same as you have been, but get them to buy more often. Increase the frequency of their purchases. So any of those five things will increase your sales. If you can get better at any one of those five areas, your sales will go up. If you can improve two areas, maybe three areas, think how high your sales could shoot. And you can easily do any of these five things in the remainder of the fourth quarter. And you may very well be able to do two or more of these things.
Where do you think people trip the most from those five things, Don?
They don't really do any of them.
Really? You're kidding.
Yeah. Or they pay lip service to one or more of them. They don't do them well. And that's why when I'm working with a coaching client, for example, we'll figure out where will they get the most bang for their buck. Which of these five areas, if they improve, will produce the greatest results fastest. And we'll start there. So my advice to people listening is look at this list of five things, these five areas in which you can increase your sales, and figure out which of them has the greatest potential to create fast results for you in this quarter. So if you just don't have much in the way of prospects to work with right now, well, get out and prospect. Prospect like crazy for the next 4 weeks or so. If you've got lots of prospects and they're just kind of sitting there, make a stronger effort to close them in the next 2 months. If you've got a few prospects and you're decent at closing them, well, look at what else you could sell them. You've got customers that you already like who like you. They're going to buy stuff. Well, what else could you add to the sale? If you're doing pretty well on the first three things, but you find that you're discounting a lot, well, look at not discounting or look at raising your prices. And if you've got a lot of customers and they buy already with some regularity, well, think of what you could do in the next 2 months to get them to buy more than they normally would. So figure out what your strengths are already and where you're weakest and where you have the greatest potential to make a difference.
I'm letting that sink in. There's some things I wanted to ask you about that, but Joseph has a question for you on Twitter, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
He wants to know, what are your influences in terms of, actually not what, but who are your influences? And he just threw out two names to be Joseph. Tom Hopkins, Buck Rogers.
I've had a lot of influences. I've been selling since I was 7 years old. I have been reading sales books and attending sales training since shortly after college. So I have seen Hopkins and Gittimer and Tracy and Ziegler and a whole bunch of other people. I have a lot of my influences are people that most people haven't heard of. And not all of my influences are strictly in the sales training realm. I've learned a lot from people in the field of marketing and people in the field of leadership. One of my big influences was Frank Meeks, who owned for a long time one of the most successful chains of Domino's pizza places in the world. For a number of years, I worked at the store in Annandale, Virginia, which was the number 8 store in the world in sales. And for a couple of years, I worked at a store in Lorton, Virginia. And while I was there, that was the number 1 store in the world in sales per address. And I learned a lot about marketing and sales and customer service from my time working in those two locations. So
you know,
lessons are all around you. Look for them. Soak them up. I pick up ideas and influences when I'm shopping, when I'm reading the newspaper, when I'm watching TV. I get ideas all over the place. So there are influences everywhere.
I'm so glad you said that, because it's funny. People will say, when they start learning about online and how to build their presence and blogging, Twitter, all that, and they always like, what the heck do you blog about? And I'm like, I have more ideas for blogs than I have time to write them.
I'm with you. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm like you. I see them everywhere. I hear them in what you would think would be unrelated conversations. You know how, whether you're in a coffee shop or you know, you're riding the train or whatever it is, and someone's having a conversation and they'll be talking about something, and all of a sudden I go, oh my God, that would make a great blog post.
Yep. Absolutely. I have the exact same experiences. One of my blog posts that got retweeted recently was a piece I wrote a couple of years ago called Sales Lessons from a Squirrel. And the idea came to me when I saw a squirrel playing outside, and it triggered my memories of my dad and his battles with squirrels to try to keep him out of his bird feeder. And I started thinking of all these parallels to sales. And so I wrote this blog post about squirrels. And you can find it on my website. If you go to doncooper.com and type in sales lessons squirrel in the search box, it'll take you right to that blog post. And it's just, you know, what we as salespeople and business owners can learn from squirrels.
It's funny, if you are able to wear those glasses, you can see related topics, information, lessons everywhere. It's like, all right, here's a great example. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but about a month ago, there was a movie that was released called Warrior, and it was about the UFC, but it was also much more about a family's own internal battle. And I sat there through that movie. I normally would not have gone to see a movie like that, but I get press releases here. Well, not press releases. I get pre-screening tickets here in Houston, being on Clout and all that mess. And I needed to do something different that night. I had been working really, really hard, and I needed a break. And I thought, what the heck? I have no idea what this is about, but I'm just going to go because I need to get away from the computer.
Right.
I walked out of that movie, and I already had two blog posts in my head about the lessons that that whole family went through and how it relates to business.
Nice.
And so I would encourage people, sometimes when you feel like you can't reach that breakthrough, it's probably because you're trying too hard and you need to go do something that seems like it's just totally unrelated, and it frees your brain up.
Right. And that can give you ideas. That can help give you insights. If you're dealing with a stubborn prospect, maybe you see a movie or you watch a TV show that all of a sudden gives you an idea, or you're reading the paper and you see something about a different industry that has something relevant industry that your target client is in. You never know where ideas will come from, so you want to be open to everything. And like you said, talking about glasses, looking through the world through a certain set of glasses, a certain set of filters. Well, what lesson is here? How can I apply this to my business? How can I apply this to my prospects and my customers?
Now, you just brought something up there that I think is really good, and we're going way deeper than we intended, but heck, that's how we do it here on Breakthrough Business Strategies Radio. I think a lot of times people don't think about problem solving for their prospects. I would love to ask you, what are some of the things that you've experienced, you know, because you talked to us as one of the five things we can do to increase sales this fourth quarter is to talk to more people. So let's pick on that one for a little bit.
Okay.
Say we're talking to more people, but what can we really be doing instead of just talking to more people? Because I've watched folks, when you give them instructions, you have to kind of give them maybe some specific things to do, and
yes,
then they start seeing. So what would be a way that you can use that number one step that's much more productive?
Well, you want to figure out, first of all, who your target market is. It's one of the things that I ask people when I'm working with them, who's your target market? And very often the answer is, well, everybody. No. Everybody is not your target market. Everybody might need what you have, sure, but that's not your target market. Your target market is those people who most need, want, and appreciate what you have, what you do, the way you do it. So who are your ideal prospects? There are people that will never buy from you. There are people that might possibly buy from you if the circumstances are right. There are people that can't wait to buy from you. If they just heard about you, they would pay you any amount of money. That's the kind of prospect you're looking for. Who's your target market? Who are your ideal prospects? Determine that and figure out what they have in common. And then you can figure out, well, what do they read? Where do they meet? How can I track those people down? And then you can get a sense of what their problems are. What are their issues? What do they need most? What are the challenges they're dealing with? What are they hoping to achieve? Because you want your conversations to be meaningful. If you don't know anything at all about someone, about an industry, it's hard to have a meaningful conversation. So the more you know, the easier it is to have a conversation that they find of value.
I think that that last part of what you just said is really critical too, that they find of value.
Yes.
Because I've seen people have what I call surface conversations.
Right.
They'll think of questions to ask just to ask a question, but they're so surface that the conversation really can't go anywhere.
Right.
And then what they do is they hold that up as an excuse to go, see, I tried it. It didn't work.
Exactly. And that just means getting better at learning how to have a conversation, both from a networking perspective and a prospecting perspective. What questions will help you get to know somebody better? What questions do you need to ask to get someone to open up about themselves, about their business? What kinds of questions will get you valuable information and help them feel important.
When you talk about helping them feel important, I'd really like to delve into this a little bit, because what I've seen over the years is people use what I would call a flattery, and everybody sees through it. It really doesn't help you build rapport. How can we help them shift their minds around what types of things are really more authentic?
That's a great question. And one of the biggest differences is between flattering somebody, trying to butter them up, that kind of flattery, and truly making somebody feel important is what your goals are. If you're trying to get on someone's good side, well, that's just flattery. And that's all about you. That's all in your interest. Making somebody feel important is about them. And that really stems from taking an interest in them, in who they are. It stems from wanting to be an appreciative audience for them, because you're curious, because you want to know about them. And that's why asking questions is so powerful, and it's why listening is so powerful. When I do seminars or when I speak, very often I'll do a program on listening. I'll incorporate that into seminars, because listening is one of the most critical skills in life, not just in sales, but in life. And most of us suck at it.
Yeah, we do.
So just listening to somebody as they talk, being an attentive, appreciative audience, makes somebody feel important. You're not saying anything. You're not saying, love your hair, great tie, what's that wonderful fragrance you're wearing? It's just listening. It's not trying to beat them over the head with how great your product or service is. It's, tell me about you. That's all it is. It's showing them that what they say is of value to you. It's why taking notes is so powerful as a listening tactic, and why I encourage salespeople and business owners, whenever they're in a sales situation, to always have a notepad to be able to take notes, because that demonstrates interest. It shows that you're paying attention. It shows that you want to keep this stuff and remember it. What that says to the prospect is, you are important to me. What you are saying is important to me. One of the questions that I teach people to ask is there anything else that's important to you? It's a simple catch-all question. It simply makes sure that nothing's been left out, nothing's been forgotten. And yet at the same time, it carries a very powerful subtext. And that subtext is, everything you have said so far has been important, and I get that. So it reinforces the idea on a subconscious level in the prospect's head that they, their ideas, their beliefs, their concerns, their needs are important to them, and therefore they're important to you as a salesperson.
I'm sitting here just absorbing this. It's making me think of times, and I'm hoping that you guys are being reflective about this too. As Don is talking, are you thinking back on times where you could have shifted and done this a little better? I've noticed that whenever I've taken situations and looked at them and go, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what could I do differently next time that'll give me a better result, you know, where did I miss pieces? It's kind of like that. We talked about that with Lou Embriano a few weeks ago. You can do that in sales as well, and I see a lot of people not doing it.
I see it all the time. It's all too common. In fact, I was doing a seminar recently, and a woman in the audience shared this story. She said when she had first gone to work for this company, she was brand new, her manager took her out on a sales call, and he said that, you know, he's going to show her how to do it. And he met with the client, and he talked and talked and talked and talked. All he did was talk. And the prospect never got a word in edgewise. Well, when the woman followed up with the prospect later, the prospect said that she was just offended that this sales manager just kept talking, wouldn't let her talk. And she complimented this woman on how great a listener she was and how wonderful that, you know, how much she liked her, because she didn't talk the whole time. And the woman ended up making the sale despite the sales manager, not because of him. Because she didn't talk and he did.
Mm. So there's a situation where I can see some people would have just taken the defeatist perspective and said, well, they ruined the sale for me, and not even try to go back and establish a relationship.
And that's one thing you can't do. Don't give up. Unless you get a strong sense that they're just not going to buy. And sometimes you need to take no for an answer. But go out there and look and see what else is available. What's possible? It's never too late.
With that in mind, Don, let's pick an example. Say you got a no from a client. You know, a lot of times you can't always meet with them personally, depending on your business. Mine, for example, I don't get to meet with a lot of people personally.
Sure.
And it feels a little frustrating when you get an answer in an email and you're kind of like, okay, do we get to have a conversation about this? Because I
right.
can think of all kind of ways to answer the things that you told me that would prevent you from having a yes in the email. But so how can you go about doing that without looking like a pest?
When I get an email, and that's frequently how potential prospects contact me first, is via email. And very often it's saying, you know, we're interested in possibly having you speak at our event. Here's the date. Are you available? What's your fee? And what I'll do is rather than send them a fee, I'll send them an email back saying, it depends on a couple of different factors. Would it be all right if I called you and we talked for a couple of minutes to get a better idea of what you're looking for? And then I can quote you an accurate fee. And I've never had anybody say no to that. We schedule a conversation. I ask a whole bunch of questions. And I don't quote my fee until after I've asked the questions I want to ask. Because then my fee makes sense in context.
So have you ever had someone just say to you, just tell me what you charge?
Nope.
Okay.
Because I'm giving them a reason why I can't just tell them that. Because what I charge depends on a number of factors. And I don't want to quote them a price that's too high or too low based upon what they truly need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've actually had people say to me, just tell me what you charge.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I've said to them, it depends on what you're going to be getting.
Right.
So it's kind of like saying, I want to the grocery store and I want to buy groceries, but I'm not going to tell you what I want to buy. How much are you going to charge me?
Yeah. And what you have to do as a salesperson is to be cognizant of the fact that if someone is just shopping and all they're doing is collecting price quotes, odds are you're not getting that business anyway. If all they're doing is calling around places and looking for prices, you don't want to play that game. It's a waste of your time. And you can't possibly win that. But that's not a real prospect. If they're not willing to have a conversation, then they're too stupid to appreciate your product or service. And they won't buy it. That's not your prospect.
I love how
that,
you teach us our lessons. They're too stupid. We're all thinking it, but none of us really want to say that.
Right. And that's why I say you need to know who your prospects are. Some people out there are just not your prospect. And people that are just price shopping and don't care about details, that's not your prospect.
So that would be the time to say, well, I appreciate your asking, but that's not how we do business here. Thanks
Correct.
For calling.
Yep. You know, so if all you care about is the lowest possible price, then I'm the wrong person for you. We're not the right company for you.
Gotcha.
And if they go away, fine. You didn't want them. They were a price shopper. They were not going to buy from you at your price. They would only buy from you at a stupid low cut rate price that you can't make any money off of. Hell with them. You don't need them. Now, the more you're engaged in actively prospecting and marketing, the more profits you have in the pipeline, the less that becomes an issue.
Hmm.
Because you can really focus on the prospects that value you.
So what you're trying to say to us as far as following the five ways of increasing our sales, that the reason that talking to more people is really valuable to us, even though it feels like kind of a time suck, how to balance it all out,
yep.
It's because it gives you more choices.
Exactly. Your attitude, your mindset, your approach is very, very different when you have 20 prospects versus 2 prospects.
Mm.
You don't need to worry about trying to bend over backward for unreasonable demands when you've got plenty of prospects in your pipeline. It's when you view prospects as being scarce that you make excuses for yourself and do things you wouldn't normally do.
Now, there's a couple things you've said today I'd kind of like to zero in on if we can. You talked
okay.
about how so many times, a lot of times people will discount in that they actually need to be charging more.
Yes.
Since everyone is so budget and price conscious, and as you said, they're sitting on their money and not using it, how can you, if you're in a situation where you've got a prospect who wants what you've got, how do you position that so that it does come across as valuable to them and it doesn't just become, at this point, they know they want it, but they know everyone is willing to work with folks just to get deals closed?
You need to be very clear on what makes you unique. You need to be very clear on what makes you worth your price. What makes you different? What makes you better? I understand that some people will pay for that and others won't. I do a whole program called The Myth of Price, Why You Should Charge More and How to Do It. And it's all about raising your price and discounting less. And one of the points I make is that price is a factor. It is always a factor. It's just almost never the biggest factor. If price were the only factor that mattered, Nordstrom wouldn't exist. Lexus wouldn't exist. FedEx wouldn't exist.
When you're the kind of client who have people like Nordstrom, they go to them.
Right.
What about those of us who have businesses where we're out drumming up the business? How can we look at that situation where we can, if you're wanting to work with more affluent clients, how do you bridge that?
You need to be very clear on what it is they value, what's important to them, and what do they want from a product or service that they can't get from somewhere else. You can always get it cheaper. You want to position yourself as being better. So in what way is your company, your product, your service better than the competition? And how much is that worth to somebody else? People will pay more if they have a good reason to do so. So what's that reason? You need to be very, very clear on that. And it can't just be, oh, our quality is better. What do you mean? Because everybody claims their quality is better.
Yeah, just like everyone says they give good customer service.
Yeah. Companies that have lousy customer service claim to have great customer service. So prove that. What does that mean exactly? You will never spend more than 1 minute on hold. Or there are some stores that say if there's more than 3 people in a line, we'll open another checkout register. You know, what do you mean when you say customer service? Give me an example. Give me a testimonial from somebody.
So do we as businesses or business owners, especially small businesses, do we not leverage that well enough?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a story I tell in Myth of Price about shopping for car services. Because when I moved from Boulder to Denver, I realized I was now closer to the airport and it might actually be cheaper to take a sedan to the airport than to park for long periods of time. So I started calling limo companies. And I called one after another, and every single one I called, I asked the same question, how much to the airport? And without fail, every single one gave me a price and nothing else. So I chose the cheapest one because I didn't know any better. You know, when it comes to limousines, I'm an idiot. I don't know what questions to ask. I don't know what makes one limo company better than another one. None of them made any effort to engage me to find out what's important to me or to educate me on what makes them worth their price. So if all things are perceived equal, we'll buy what's cheapest. Because there's no point in paying more if we're not getting more. Your job as a salesperson or as a business owner is to show your prospect in what way things are not equal. And if you don't do that and you lose the sale on price, that's your own fault. Because you didn't really lose it on price. You lost it because you didn't explain what makes your price worthwhile.
So what happened in that situation?
I went with the cheapest company.
Mm.
I figured if I didn't like them, I'd try somebody else, but I'd start with whoever's cheapest. And it turned out they were good, I guess. I mean, I don't know. They weren't bad. Is somebody else better? Maybe. I don't know. I may never know. They all lost their chance. Every single company had a chance to grab me as a customer, and every single one but one of them lost it because they didn't make the effort. They didn't try.
So that I want to leave everybody. I think this is a great place for us to kind of summarize. How have you lost your past five sales from not showing people why?
Are you asking me?
No, I'm saying to the listeners.
Asking listeners, yeah.
Yeah.
So I do that. I look back on every sale I don't close. I look at what did I do wrong? What could I have done differently? And in some cases, it wasn't me. And that's always going to be the case. There are some sales you won't make no matter what you do. There's sales there's no way you could have closed. It's not possible. So you're never going to close every sale. But look at every sale you don't make and look at, is there something I could have done differently? Did I not follow up properly? Did I not explain what makes us different? Did I not do enough research? Did I not ask enough of the right questions? Did I not talk with all of the influencers? Was my presentation too complex? Was it too long? Did I not ask for the sale?
And I've gotten much better about asking for the sale. I want to share with everyone as we're doing our summary. Boy, talk about being authentic on air. I lost a huge contract just recently. And I want you guys to know why I lost it so you don't do the same thing. I was partnering with someone. We spent over 40 hours working on this presentation because we were having to put together a video. And so it was very intense. And when I kept talking about how are we going to show them why they need to go with us, the conversation kept going, well, we don't want to look like braggarts. We want the presentation to be all about them, and we don't want the presentation to be about us and what we've done. Big frickin' mistake. It was a very, very, very close decision, and guess why we lost? We didn't show them enough of why they should have picked us, because we were afraid of being seen as tooting our horn too much.
Mm-hmm.
I won't ever make that mistake again.
Good. There's a fine balance because to an extent you're right. The program, the presentation should be about them. At the same time, you need to make the case for you and why you're the best fit for them and how what you do will benefit them. And if you don't make the case that you're great, then it's hard to show them how they'll benefit from hiring you versus somebody else.
And we covered that in the second meeting. We did a lot of that, but when it came down to actually, you know, showing them examples, we had talked about it, but we didn't make sure we translated that one piece over into the final presentation. So don't make that mistake. You're not being a braggart. You're showing them why you're the best person for the job.
Yes. And that gets to something very important. We need to always be learning. We need to always be in education mode. So you can never stop learning. I do sales training for a living, and I still attend sales training because I want to see what other ideas are out there, what new ideas are out there, what new technologies are out there. I want to see what's out there that I've forgotten. I want to see what's out there that I disagree with. I'm always challenging myself, so I'm always studying and learning. So we all need to be constantly reading books, going to seminars, listening, to audio and video programs to get better. If you want your sales to go up in the fourth quarter, if you want them to go up again in the first quarter and second quarter of next year, you need to learn more about sales. Get your hands on every book you can. Get your hands on every audio program, every video program you can. Train yourself. Train your people. Training has been proven to be the biggest return on investment of anything you could spend your business dollars on.
You know, it's interesting that you should say that, because I've been showing a few people that I want as clients where they aren't leveraging their people, not
yes.
just their staff, but their own prospects and their customers at conferences well enough.
Right.
And now they're starting to go, whoa, okay, we're seeing it. We're seeing it. And so slowly things are really starting to pick up there. Don, gosh, gee, you know, it would be so easy for us to just continuously talk to you, because you are such a wealth of information on sales, but our timeline is telling me it's time for us to shift gears here. I want to thank you so much for helping everyone have a totally different awareness of what sales are like for that fourth quarter. And let's start chunking those limiting beliefs, guys, all those excuses that we give ourselves around this. Download this podcast. Go listen to this again. I'm telling you, go listen to this again.
And you mentioned earlier that I'm giving away a copy of my special report, 10 Ways to Increase Your Sales Right Now. And the way to get that is to go to a special web page on my site. Go to doncooper.com/BBS. It's a hidden page. You can only get to it by typing in directly, doncooper.com/BBS. And you'll be able to download absolutely free 10 Ways to Increase Your Sales Right Now. You'll also find some additional business building resources there with special pricing just for your listeners.
So can I put that on the radio show blog?
You can, absolutely.
Okay. I didn't put that there, so that's one of those. I will go put that after the show. So, Don, thank you so much for helping us to really shift our gears around what we can do for this fourth quarter, because I want to start seeing more businesses thrive. When businesses feel like they're thriving, then they spend more. When they spend more, our
yep.
whole economy improves.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really appreciate that.
You're welcome, Michelle.